Sexton trying to get loose. He'll fire.
He knocks it down.
But Carl slammed it home. Garland upstairs.
Oh!
Sexton is fine. A thunderous dunk.
And Allen blocked the shot at the rim.
Welcome to the 2021 Cavs Draft presented by Panini. I'm your host, Justin Rowan, and this is the Chase Down Podcast Wine and Gold Radio crossover extravaganza. I can't think of a better group of people to be spending draft night with than this current crew. We'll start things off with my co-host, Carter Rodriguez. Carter, how you doing, buddy?
I'm doing well. I'm feeling really, really good. Crazy swash of breaking news before the draft. Everyone was saying it's going to be a little crazy on the transaction front. Sure seems like it's going to be. And, you know, I'm just really excited for draft. I cannot believe it's only 30 minutes away. We're going to have to go on this podcast. We don't got a lot of time.
Oh, I don't think we're going to have any problem going. I have been revved up for weeks now. And joining us today is Cavs.com beat writer Joe Gabriel, one of the voices of Wine and Gold Radio. Joe, welcome back. It is so great to be talking to you again.
Thanks for having me on, guys. Thanks for doing the crossover. I'm like, there's like a big three, but I'm the only one right now. So I'm like Kevin Durant. I'm going to have to put up all the points tonight.
That's but right. Part
we'll
four.
We'll be joined soon.
Yeah, part four of this crew, Rafa Hernandez-Brito, will be joining us shortly, but we got plenty of talk to talk about before he comes. He's just going to eat up all the oxygen once he gets here, right? Joe, I would love to actually start off with the prospect profiles you did. I am someone that likes, you know what, too much detail. My eyes start to roll over, but your profiles were the perfect length, really concise, really, really, really good job that you did on those. As you were doing those prospect profiles, what was kind of the overwhelming sense that you got of this draft class compared to past years?
Well, when I was doing it, the one thing that impressed upon me the most was that seeing these guys in college, the experience that they had the year before, again, who knows how the draft would have shaken out had Isaac Okoro or Tyler Haliburton or Anthony Edwards played in the tournament. Mm-hmm. Had they finished the season, you would have really seen. So I thought, for me, seeing guys play through their college season, compete in the tournament against the best of the best, you know, aside from Jalen Green and Kuminga, to me, that's what really stood out this year as opposed to last year, in that you have a better feel for the players this year, I feel.
Yeah, it was like last year we had all the time in the world to break these guys down and none of the evidence in the world to
right.
do it.
Right.
And even with Green Kuminga, we have all this. Yeah, I mean, we didn't see them in the tournament. We also got to see him play against grown-ass men who are, you know, professional ball players. And we got to see how they fared. So I feel like the evidence is really, really strong this year.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, we have better tape on guys. You know more about guys. And also there's some players that probably stuck an extra year and are coming out this year that adds to a deep draft. So it's a top-heavy draft. It's a deep draft. And I'm like you guys. I'm excited to get it going now.
I'm excited to see how this all shakes out, because you look at it, this was a draft that has been talked about for quite a few years. Like I remember the last 2-3 years, they were saying, hey, this is going to be one of the best drafts ever. Around last year, I had heard that, oh, there might be 7 players that would be in consideration for the first overall pick. Now, that list has kind of dwindled down, depending who you talk to. It's about 3 to 4. But the third tier of this draft as well really stands out to me of quality prospects throughout the teens and even into the 20s, where these guys really seem like they're going to make an immediate impact on the NBA. And a lot of franchises are going to have their fortunes changed by who the guys they're picking tonight.
Yeah, it's a really cool draft. I think it's one that you're going to want to pay attention to longer. I think there are some drafts where you can mostly turn off the TV past pick 10, unless you're an insane person like us. But I don't think this is one of those. And I think, and because of that, I think there's going to be a lot of activity of teams trying to get in to the late lottery and even to the end of the first round, because there are legit players here. Middle of the lottery is chock full of athletic wings. Like, since when do those guys last till 12, 13, 14? This might be a draft where they do. And then at the end of the draft, you got a ton of really great point guards and really good prospects that could, you know, maybe not start for you, but could be a backup on a really good team really soon. So it's a really exciting class, but I do think we should just, in the limited time we have, we got to talk about the top, baby, because this is, there are three and maybe four legit stars there. Joe, kind of where, if you had to kind of put your own personal power ranking on the four prospects, where do you go?
Boy, that's a tough one. That's a tough one because, again, you're almost judging them on different scales, in that Cade Cunningham is probably the most ready right now, but Jalen Green probably has an upper, better upside. Mm-hmm. Evan Mobley is by far the best big man, and there's a pretty good drop-off after him, a really good drop-off after him. So, and Jalen Suggs is a player I love. I might like him more than any of the other four. So, as far as ranking them, I'm going to go ahead and rank them. I'm going to say Mobley, Cunningham, Green, Suggs.
It's such a beauty as in the eye of beholder draft, because these guys, they don't really overlap, right? Like, each one brings something different to the table. Cade Cunningham is this big playmaking wing, which is really one of the most difficult things to find in the NBA, is a wing that contributes on both ends of the floor, can playmake. Evan Mobley, this unique talent that's really one of one. There's not a lot. You can compare aspects of his game to other players, but he's a really, really unique player. Jalen Green, doing what he did in the G League, just a dynamic scorer, somebody that you know can contribute. And Jalen Suggs, someone that went to a loaded program, really stepped up, earned his way throughout that season, and impressed people with his ability to guard bigger players, with his composure and leadership. I think that's what's made this whole draft process so interesting, because even if there is consensus in a vacuum, each of these teams at the top has to figure out exactly what their draft philosophy is and what they're prioritizing as they are evaluating these prospects.
I mean, we saw that. We saw Detroit really, I mean, at least in the publicly reported sphere, really seemed to put thought into this. You know, as good as Cade is as a prospect, I think it really speaks to not any deficiency in him, but it speaks to just what kind of prospects Mobley and Green are, that it was pretty clear Detroit was not 100% locked, or at the least were at the point in their analysis where they were kind of doing the mental math of, is Cade so much better that if we can get a king's ransom and trade down and still get one of these monster players, you know, what does that mean for us? So I'm really, really excited, but I do think, just based on kind of the way the tea leaves seem to be reading, based on public reporting, it's looking like Mobley might be the guy that falls at three. Justin, what are you excited about with Mobley?
Well, I'm really excited about this for the reason that you actually brought up before, Carter, which is the Cavs are in a unique position where this isn't like Dallas drafting Luka Doncic, where there was no young players available really around him. The Cavs have had opportunity to develop quite an interesting and intriguing young core, and now they have the opportunity to add a really, really unique talent that fits well with the players that they have. As I mentioned before, the top four really has guys that I could see fitting with the Cavs very well. I think there's a lot of different unique things that you can do. But with Mobley being such a unique talent, and when you listen to a lot of the draft experts, Jonathan Givony and Schmitz, like, they have Mobley as their number two guy in a vacuum. And for the Cavs to have the opportunity to draft like someone like him or Jalen Suggs or even Jalen Green, I think it's a really, really intriguing opportunity.
Joe, when you watched Evan Mobley, kind of what did you see out of him?
Well, the way I wrote about him, like, you know, and this is a common term these days, but he's a unicorn, in that to see a 7-footer do the things he does is really unique. And another thing that strikes me about him, and I talked about this with Kendrick Russell, in that you, especially on the defense, you can't tell if he's left-handed or right-handed. He's so good with both hands, especially around the rim, that you almost can't tell. And for Evan Mobley, here's a good example. The Cavs last year moved up a little bit, but the previous two seasons, they were so far at the bottom of the block shots list that the top team doubled their amount. And I'll give you another number here. Jared Allen blocked 71 shots in 51 games last year. Evan Mobley blocked 95 in 33 games. He had he had four games with four blocks, three games with five blocks, and three more games with six blocks. The guy led the Pac-12 in blocks and rebounding. I mean, he's the first player to win, I think, Freshman of the Year, Defensive Player of the Year, and Player of the Year since Anthony Davis in a major conference. So, I mean, the guy's got
pretty good.
He's got everything.
What's funny about you kind of calling him a unicorn is, in the modern parlance, I feel like unicorn tends to mean big guy who can shoot. Mm-hmm. And while I think that that a lot of people are projecting Evan Mobley as a plus shooter, that's not the part of his game that makes him a unicorn. It's the handle. Justin, you want to talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, I completely agree. I think at one point the NBA was going to a point where small ball meant going small, making sure you have five guys out there that can do a little bit of everything. And I think what you're seeing now is more and more of these talents coming in with size, yet that ability to contribute in every facet of the game. And Evan Mobley is a prime example of that. He's someone that can allow you to play small ball while being massive. He's over 7 feet, 7'4" wingspan. And really, I think that's the way the NBA is going, because you look at what the Milwaukee Bucks did with Giannis at the four alongside a big man in Brook Lopez. They were playing a modern game with size. And as more and more of these talents come in, you look at some of the guys that are coming in future drafts. There's a lot of these 7-footers that can do everything. I think it's really important for whatever team drafts Mobley to have that size, to be able to play that up-tempo style, that small ball style with size. And that's a really, really intriguing possibility when you think about the pairing of him and Jared Allen, two mobile bigs that can defend pretty much anybody.
God, I'll tell you what, if the sex lane backcourt is to continue, I can't think of a better front court pairing than Isaac Okoro, Evan Mobley, and Jared Allen on defense. I mean, you can put Mobley on the best wing scorer, and what really you're able to do is kind of what the Lakers were able to do in the year they won their championship, playing AD and guys like JaVale or Dwight Howard at the five, is whoever is going out there and hedging hard on the pick and roll and really protecting your weak point of attack defenders at the guard position, you still got a monster back on the back line to muck everything up and to play 2-on-1. And that's one of Evan Mobley's strengths, is when he gets put in a 2-on-1 situation where he's the one, he's able to play that middle ground and play chicken and make them make a decision they don't want to make. And the Cavs now have two guys like that. Mm-hmm. And it's not like they've got two stiffs. I think anyone who's concerned about the fit of that front court, they should only be concerned on the offensive side of the ball, because defensively, I think it's kind of bananas, honestly, because Allen can cover for most of Mobley's deficiencies, which right now is really just size and his frame.
Yeah, I completely agree. Joe, when you were doing your evaluations, were there players that jumped out to you that you weren't necessarily expecting to like as much as you did? And then when you kind of sat down, watched the tape and did your research, kind of blew you away?
Yeah, I mean, Jalen Johnson from Duke, and I know he took a lot of guff from leaving Duke after, I think, 13 games, maybe. Mm-hmm. He left out soon, but he, like Cade Cunningham, when you watch him, that's a grown man playing ball. You know what I mean? There's kids playing, and then that's a man right there. So he's an interesting guy. Keon Johnson set the, I think he set the vertical jump record at the combine. He's another player. But like I said, Jalen Johnson kind of jumped out to me. And, you know, what I said earlier, in that you saw these kids play, you didn't see him play, and Duke didn't make the tournament, which was crazy. And so that was kind of interesting. But, I was saying earlier before we started that there's some second rounders that I'm kind of interested in. If they make it to the second round, the one player that I love is, and now I'm forgetting his name. Jason Preston from OU.
Oh, how could you not? I'm a Bobcat alum. I'm a Bobcat alum.
There you go.
So I've been on the Jason Preston train for 2 years, and it's funny watching a kid like that, because you keep thinking as a fan of a small MAC school, you know, you don't produce a lot of NBA players, and when you see a player as good as that, you go, I'm pretty sure he's an NBA player, but like, I have no proof, you know? And sometimes you go see those players do go play against some top level competition in the tourney, and you go, oh, then no, they're not. And, you know, we saw Preston do it against Illinois this year. We saw him do it in the tournament against UVA. And yes, he is just such a steady, creative playmaker, an amazing backstory. Do you think he's going to make it to the second round, Joe? Because I'm not sure he is.
I agree. I don't know. When I first started writing about him, I thought he would. But now the more I watch him, the more I read about him, I'm with you. I don't think he lasts till the second round. And I think the numbers that people are going to look at are his rebounding numbers.
Oh, my God.
He's a really tough rebounder. And like you said, Carter, he had his best games against the best competition. If you wanted to say, well, this kid, he's a fluke. He made college through sending in his Twitter highlights. It's a famous story. You thought, like you said, maybe he was going to get out of his depth. He never did. And not only that, he turned it up a notch against tougher teams. So there's a player that I'm really looking forward to seeing where he goes. Jericho Sims, another player you watched in college for a long time. Curious where he's to go. And the other guy is Luka Garza. I mean, the guy was like National Player of the Year. He was two-time Big Ten Player of the Year, and he may not get drafted. It's
a cold world out there, Joe.
It is. And I just thought, boy, for some of these guys, you stay 4 years. It's like a black mark on your record if you stay 4 years. I mean,
Chris Duarte, who is probably going in the lottery, I think he said in a presser or in some media availability, he said, like, if I'm the guy if you're picking me to try to win 6-7 years from now, I'm not your guy.
Yeah.
It's like, right. Well, yeah, but you're about as old as me, Chris. But he's probably going to go pretty high. I mean, he might be a lotto pick. So there are exceptions. And, you know, as much as we are obsessed with getting young players, and I get why, because you have so much room on the development curve, and a lot of these older players are finished products, there's a lot of value. I mean, Justin and I have talked a lot about wanting the Cavs to try to find their way back into the lottery. And a guy like Corey Kispert, who we weren't super hyped about in the top eight, if you could get him in the mid to late lottery, an older player, sure, but a guy who is probably going to be a helpful player very early in his career, you're not wasting his entire rookie deal waiting for him to get good and then have to pay him on spec. on the back end, there's an inefficiency to be found with older players if you pick the right ones.
And again, the Cavs, we talk about shot blocking. You know, the 3-point shot is obviously something they need to improve upon. They know it. They need to work on it next year. They need to get players to get better at it. And yeah, Kispert's a good example. You know, if you could get him late in the lottery, why not take a shot?
Yeah, and when this tier three is so deep, like you mentioned Jalen Johnson before, who I'm a big fan of. I've seen him mocked anywhere from 13 to 21. Like there's so many talented players available and so many teams with different needs, a lot of picks on the market. I listed them out, Joe, on our last podcast, and it was basically every pick between 9 and 21, actually 7 and 21, that has been rumored to be available. Like it just seems like there's such an appetite for movement. And I think some of that is just due to the quality of this class. There's a lot of kind of situations where it's beauty is in the eye of the beholder, right? We might be high on Jalen Johnson, but another team isn't. And then, as you mentioned, like someone like Jason Preston, we, as people that follow the Cavs, we're pretty aware of what a really big work ethic can do. I mean, Sexton, Garland, and Okoro all came in a little raw in their rookie years. And those were guys that just absolutely stuck with it. And when you look at how good the player development is in the NBA right now, I think teams are starting to prioritize those really hard workers more than ever, because they know if they're putting the hours in and they're putting in the sweat equity, we could have a real gem here. And it's true for even the players that aren't drafted tonight, that don't get their name called. Look at Dean Wade, Lamar Stevens, Fred VanVleet. There's tons of examples of guys that have proven that not having your name called tonight isn't the end of your story. And I think it's a really healthy place for the league to be in.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I do want to kind of, even though this is a top of the draft guy, I do think it's a sneaky good segue, because a guy like Jalen Suggs is not Justin Knight's preferred pick, but he is one of those high, high floor guys. I mean, I think the chances of Suggs not being a really good NBA player are like almost zero. Joe, make the case. Obviously, Justin and I are pretty all in on Mobley, but if you had to make the case for Suggs at three, kind of what would the case be?
Man, that's a tough one. At three, Suggs? somebody was talking recently about the Pistons and their heyday, the Bad Boys, and comparing them to the Cavs in that when the Pistons were really great, they had Isaiah and Joe Dumars and Vinnie Johnson. None of those guys were probably over 6'3", 6'4". How you balanced it was by having really, really tough guys down low. So if the Cavs are going to go with another guard, they're going to have to beef up down low. So as much as I love Suggs, you'd have to move some furniture if you were going to draft him in this draft.
Yeah, and the fit is certainly tough. I mean, there's no way around it. The Cavs have drafted guards highly, and even a player like Isaac Okoro, who plays some at the two. You know, it's not like Okoro is a pure three. He's not one of those wings that's a 3-4. He's really more of a 2-3 at this point in his career. I think the reason you take Suggs is, in a lot of ways, more of a cultural thing. I mean, he's such a winner, such a leader, and so well-regarded. But and you know, like, we just saw Drew Holiday be a culture changer for a team that ended up winning the championship. And I do think he might be a Drew Holiday type player. Justin, what are your thoughts on Suggs?
Yeah, I completely agree. I think the Cavs are in a position where, to steal a phrase from Omar Little, that even if they miss, they can't miss. Like,
there's almost no choice that Kobe Altman in the front office can make tonight that I'll be like, damn it.
Right. Like, Suggs is an incredibly talented player. And yes, there would be fit questions, but at the same time, talent really does win out in the NBA. I remember last year kind of worrying about the center position because it seemed like Tristan Thompson was moving on from the Cavs. There's no long-term options. And then out of thin air, Jared Allen, Isaiah Hartenstein made a really big impact. Like, the landscape can change so quickly in the NBA that I think you really just have to prioritize getting the most talent possible, getting all the talent that you can have, and then figuring out the best ways to maximize them, whether that be consolidating that talent down the road or figuring out a way to make it work. I think that there's a lot of options there, and that's kind of the smart way to go about team building. So, I mean, I've had strong opinions on the draft in the past, and they've been wrong. Like, I'm not a draft expert, but it is clear, at least through my view, that all of these guys in the top four, especially, and even top five, as I'm a big fan of Scotty Barnes as well, these guys are all really, really high level prospects.
It's really exciting. I think the league is in such a good place with this young crop of people, because I think it was Suggs who said it that was like, it's cool that all the guys at the top of this draft are also really good guys. Like, you haven't heard many character concerns, and normally at the top of drafts, you'll hear at least one or two guys where you just, like, just through the rumor mill, maybe not publicly reported, but you'll hear little grumbles, little snipes like that guy. And I feel like I haven't heard any of that. Joe, in your reporting and in your researching, what have you heard about this group?
But that's a really great point, Carter. Normally at this point of the draft, there's so many red flags. You can say this guy. There's not one guy in this whole draft that even the guy mentioned, Jalen Johnson, I think.
Yeah, he's probably the closest thing.
That he left Duke early, that was probably the biggest red flag in the draft. I can't think of anything else that, you know, and rather than focusing on the negative, you're right. These guys are good guys. They all seem like good guys. Again, Jalen Suggs, you're right. These guys are culture changing type guys. So, you know, the NBA has just changed so much. And you asked me about what I noticed doing the prospect profiles. When you used to do prospect profiles, you'd read about a guy who went to this high school or that high school. Guys don't do that anymore. Mm-hmm. By the time guys get to 19 years old, they've already gone to different programs, and they're in all kinds of different, you know, AAU teams and different high schools. So things have really changed in the draft over the years.
Yeah, they really have. And it is interesting that with so much time to look at these prospects, because this has been a high profile class, that none of that has really come up. It really does seem like a high talent, high character crop of young players. So with all of that in mind, Cavs sitting there with the third overall pick. Joe, I want to lean on you here because you've been around this team. We've been fans of this team for a long time, but you've been around this team for a while. What does this pick and this moment in time mean for both the Cavs and Cleveland?
This is a, you know, I feel this is a cornerstone pick. I think you have to look at it that way. And I think they're thinking of it that way, and that this pick has to be, you have to hit on this pick. And this guy has to be, I believe, a corner, not even just a starter, cornerstone player. And then you can start, I think you can draw your baseline here. And now I think you could start thinking about winning and building around the guys you have. Because you mentioned a couple of players, Okoro, Sexton, Garland, Allen. Now you're looking at a, you know, if they draft the way we think, you're looking at a solid starting five. Mm-hmm. I think now you start, this is your baseline. Now you start building from here. So this is a huge pick.
Yeah. And I mean, it what's so interesting about it to me is, like, sometimes, you know, and we saw this happen in 2003 where LeBron was so good right off the rip. It was kind of hard to build a really strong team of prospects around him. You had one draft really of that. And, you know, I think the general consensus nationally about the Cavs is they've got some pretty good prospects and they don't have a number one. And what's really nice about the way that things have broken is if they do draft their a true number one in this pick, whether it's Jalen Green, whether it's Evan Mobley, whether it's Cade Cunningham, which not going to happen, but he ain't getting there. But like, no matter who they, like, if they get that player isn't coming in cold. They're not coming into a team of, you know, aging veterans that maybe are ready to move on to their next, to a contender, or just a talent barren team full of G leaguers. This is a team with four or five real, actually I'd go higher, six or seven really, really, you know, capable young players that can grow with this pick. So I feel like the arc and the trajectory and the environment that that whoever gets drafted is going to be in is in so much of a better place than they might have been in 2003 or like Kyrie was in 2011. Mm-hmm. I just feel like the incubator is much more ready to grow alongside the player.
Yeah, that's a great point, Carter. And that when Kyrie came and there was so much pressure on him, you know, to be the next LeBron or to take this franchise, it's all on your shoulders now. And that affected him. It really did, and it probably affected him down the road. To your point, Mobley, who, if the Cavs take Mobley, he's a soft-spoken guy by all accounts, not a big rah-rah type guy. So you can give him time, even if he's your number one, to kind of learn and grow with your other young, good players. And guys like Garland, Sexton, Okoro can tell him, hey, this is the culture, this is how we do it, bring him along, and all grow together. You have a bunch of young guys by the time, if you keep them together, by the time they're 25, 26, you got a real ball club.
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, Garland came real close to making Team USA, got that experience with that. Colin Sexton put up all-star caliber numbers last season. Jared Allen ranked as one of ESPN's top 25 under 25. He's going to, if it is Evan Mobley or whoever this pick is, he's going to be brought into a situation where they're not asked to do too much too early. They are going to be able to slot in and just do focus on what they do best, not develop those bad habits by being asked to do too much. And I think it's a really, really unique situation and a fortunate one for the Cavs to be in. And from this point on, like, I think the top priority is just getting the right adults in the room. I think they're, you look at Larry Nance Jr., he's a great example of that. Colin Sexton has credited Kevin Love for mentoring him and being there for him. And just getting more of those adults around this young core, I think, is going to be the priority. But, oh my goodness, we are just moments away from this draft starting. So I think now would be the perfect time to wrap things up. Joe, do you have any final thoughts before I wrap this up?
I just hope it's going to be a great draft. I'd love to see the Cavs maybe get back in. There's a lot of teams with multiple first-round picks. So I think it's going to be a wild one. I think it's going to be a wild one tonight.
My fingers are crossed, too. I'm keeping an eye on the Houston 2022 second-round pick. I don't think Houston is going to be a good team anytime soon, so that could be pretty valuable. There's a lot of things that they can do. Hopefully, Kobe Altman is making lots of calls. I would assume he's making a lot of calls. He seems to surprise us all. But thank you so much, Joe, for joining us. We really do appreciate it. I'm sure you're happy that you didn't have Rafa taking up all your airtime here.
I have to do it when he's not around. I have to do a lot of talking. I don't like this.
Well, we like it a bunch. I hope all of our listeners tuning in on YouTube appreciate this as well. Make sure you like and subscribe. If you're listening to this via podcast, make sure you're checking out both the Chase Down Podcast and Wine and Gold Radio. We appreciate all of your support. Hope you guys enjoy your draft night. And until next time, go Cavs.